But we're joined now by Mr. Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States, and is the founder of the International Action Center. And that was done in 1992, and he's had a lot of work on his hands, too. Are you there, Ramsey?
I am, Phil. Good to hear you.
Good to hear you. And by the way, I'm impressed. It must take a lot to be going into Syria, as you have done. You were there only about 5 or 6 days ago.
Yeah.
Coming
in from Lebanon is quite easy, overland.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real violence going on in that southeast corner of Syria.
Poor
country's been destroyed slowly.
Mm-hmm. You traveled there, I believe, in 2013, so you have, of course, opportunity to kind of compare. How are you? How did you find Damascus in relation to your previous visits?
Well, remembering that we only went in, I guess it's 75 miles, maybe closer to 100, to the capital. Things were quite normal. We got there in the afternoon, schools letting out, and people on the streets, and everything was quite normal. Down the old town by the famous old cathedral where St. John the Baptist is burned. He's buried, and which has a minaret named for Jesus, if you can believe it. Isn't that terrific?
Mm.
People are crowded around just normally. But that's not to say that there's not terrible violence going on in across two-thirds of the country.
Mm-hmm.
There's an effort, a major effort, to overthrow the government. It's caused probably 250,000 deaths by now.
Now, that has been going on for 4 years. Where do you put the responsibility for this war and for the failure? I mean, it does now involve one of the most notorious phenomena, this thing called ISIS, where you just mentioned the tomb of a street or a monument named for Jesus. These are gentlemen who destroy churches, they destroy synagogues, they kill Muslims that they don't like, and yet the United States says that its posture towards Syria seems they're equally opposed to the government of Syria and to ISIS. Can you explain that?
It sounds like schizophrenia, but it's not. ISIS is a phenomenon caused by the terrible violence that the greater region, has suffered for some time now. It drives a lot of people, particularly younger people, to fanaticism. They just want to go out and smash whatever they perceive to be the cause of what's destroying where they live and who they are. But the overall purpose of what you might call Western interests, which are dominated by the United States, are to weaken those countries to a degree where they're no threat to anybody. They're struggling for survival. And the best evidence of that would be what's happened to Libya and what's happened to Baghdad and all the rest of Iraq. And what's happening now to two-thirds of Syria. And the government's hanging on. It seems to be hanging on pretty easily, but that doesn't mean that when the mopping up is done elsewhere, that heavily financed foreign interests and forces won't come in and take over the capital, too. But the ultimate consequence seems clear, unless Syria is able to prevent it by military force, and that's what happened to Libya. Libya was wealthy and the highest living standard in Africa by far, gave more legal aid without strings attached to sub-Saharan Africa than any other country, just out of, as far as anybody can tell, charitable, gave a lot more than Libya did to Arab countries. But you're going to have a vast wasteland there throughout Syria if that government falls. Mm-hmm. And as you've had in Iraq, was well off. I mean, the standard of living was high, education was good, health care was good, housing. And now it's a, you could call it a vast wasteland. It's a human disaster. Just staying alive is an art.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the U.S. uses this rhetoric, which at this point, it just seems laughable, that they say, well, we want to see the extension of democracy, we want to see freedom, blah, blah. But the current government of Syria is a non-sectarian government. It's a secular government. It has no problem with any religion. Its peoples have lived there for so long. But yet and still, there's this sponsorship of on the part of the U.S. and others of sectarian conflict. I just wonder, I guess maybe I could locate that issue in, say, Turkey. What kind of role is Turkey, and who is it who's cooperating with them to cause this disruption and threat to the sovereignty of that region, the northeast region of Syria? Who's and what is their goal?
Well, I have to consider Turkey as a opportunist player in this picture. It wouldn't have initiated it. It's just more trouble than it could want. It has cooperated. I was on the border between Turkey and Iraq during the Iraq assault on Iraq, and the U.S. had an airfield up there. I counted more than 100 planes on it, airplanes on it that were mm-hmm. being used to on Turkish soil to assault Iraq. So Iraq was clearly, I mean, that's minor evidence, actually, clearly participating in the basically U.S. effort to overthrow those countries. Mm-hmm. You have to assume that it doesn't want independent nations. It doesn't want nations governed by the people. Egypt to be the best illustration of that. Poor Egypt, you know, a glorious history and a glorious culture and wonderful people, and they finally get an elected mm-hmm. guy who's hardly even a professional politician, and he starts doing things for the people, and he doesn't survive long enough to catch your breath. So the military back in there, and Sisi now is cracking down, is you know, in part because the people are more alert, more aware, and more courageous to defy the military. But the military there is much harsher now than it was under Mubarak or his two predecessors after the kingdom failed.
Mm-hmm. That raises an issue, too. You also, during your visit, I noticed you met with the Palestine Liberation, Palestinian Front for Liberation, I'm sorry, I got their label, the title wrong, I think. Popular Front, pardon me, the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine. Now, their circumstances have certainly been affected by the fighting in Syria, but also situation in Gaza and Egypt. Can you talk about that and what you learned from your meeting with them?
Well, they're on the run, so to speak. I mean, they got to keep their heads down because they're being shot at. There's an effort to really destroy independence of all those movements. Palestinians are the oldest target, and the Palestinian elements in Syria and in other countries in the area, Jordan, all around, have been under the gun all along. And but you'd have to assume that what we're trying to do is destroy military power of Arab countries in that area of the Middle East that is on the east end of the Mediterranean, putting Egypt back under the military dictatorship. But Libya, mm-hmm. right next door to Egypt on its west, which had the highest living standard. I mean, the people were best off of any country in the region and any country in Africa. And now they're living to stay alive. I mean, it's an art.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want is to destroy independent Islamic power, at least in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the biggies around, like, you know, Pakistan or Indonesia, where you've got 100 million people plus, more people there than in the countries we've been talking about in the Mediterranean area.
Can you talk about sanctions, those that are being brought against Syria, and this diplomatic game of closing embassies, removing ambassadors, and like the sanction? What's the effect of a sanction? And if we're seeking peaceful solutions, one would think maybe the way to go would be to be opening embassies and exchanging ambassadors and being serious about talks, but sanctions and closing embassies. Can you discuss that?
Well, it certainly doesn't increase our ability to encourage peace in the region. You got to talk with people, negotiate with them, and even pressure them to seek nonviolent solutions to their hurts. And but what we do encourages the violence and encourages the destruction. And it's hard to consider any other explanation when you look at Libya and Iraq. You had two functioning governments. The standard of living of the people is the best in the region. And now they're devastated, absolutely devastated. There's no security. Your kid goes to school, don't know if you get back, and you don't even know if the school will be there when he arrives.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know where the next meal is coming from, even.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is Ramsey Clark. He's the founder of the International Action Center, just returned days ago from Damascus. By the way, you were accompanied by former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, I should mention, and others. There have been a pattern of talks arranged. What did the Syrians say in terms of... there's a Moscow meeting, I believe, and I know that there are others scheduled. What kind of prospects do you see for those talks and how they're regarding them?
Well, I'm an optimist. I hope the destructive course that's been followed will be, if not completely stopped or reversed, at least... ameliorated to some extent. Those are old cultures and civilizations, and we can learn more from them than we can teach them by far. But what we're teaching them is violence is the way. That's not a happy lesson. And the students are liable to learn it too well, and we'll just have violence all over. But
yeah, by the way, let me
at least in Libya, the violence has been so successful that they don't have the capacity for retaliation at this time.
Yeah, you know, Ramsey, I think sometimes this thing of U.S. always presents itself as a beacon, the light on the hill, and all these sort of things. But I know you're from Texas, and of course, there's also Native Americans, Mexican Americans. There should be a portion of American people and African Americans who were enslaved who say domestic policy is foreign policy. I mean, some of this stuff has happened within the continental USA, hasn't it?
Well, we had one big civil war over it.
I remember that one.
Yeah, it was, in principle, it was righteous, but in, it's a bloody way to do it, you know. It'd be nice to find some way that was kinder for children and others. Mm-hmm. But somehow or other, I mean, just look at our military budget. My God, we've got a military budget that doesn't have any relationship to defense. We don't need that anything like that for defense, but we're oppressing people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're failing at it, but in the process, we create enormous misery. I was in Vietnam twice last year, and it was really refreshing because Vietnam is doing so well. I mean, they've still got hospitals full of Agent Orange children that don't have legs or arms and things like that, but Korea's doing very well. The South is getting a little overstimulated for materialism.
Mm-hmm.
The North is isolated, but the society's doing very well. There's peace and good education, good housing. City like Pyongyang, which is a new city, it has to be a new city because the old city was leveled to the ground. You remember those pictures, just rubble, and now it's kind of a shining light as cities go.
Well,
but destruction is not the way to progress. Friendship is, and our policy is power and not kindness.
Well, Ramsey, I'm glad. I'm really glad I asked that question because that's some information I think our listeners need to know. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Ramsey Clark of the International Action Center. You're doing great work, and I'm really happy that you made that trip to Damascus. Thank you.
Great to hear you, Phil. You're a good friend. Hope to see you soon.
Okay, doke. Thank you, Ramsey. Bye bye.
Bye.
That's Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States, one of the really outstanding figures in modern American history, actually. I remember I visited an American novelist one time in Los Angeles on another mission entirely, and we talked about some people we might know in common, and I said, Ramsey Clark, and he said, he looked at the floor a long time. This is a very thoughtful man. And then he looked at me, and he said, he was our greatest attorney general. And then he talked about something else.